Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
It was something that I knew that I wanted to do. I wanted to be around the sport. I enjoyed the sport so much, but I think I wanted to be around it in a different way. You know, I really wanted to start to get my footing on how to help student athletes and college athletes at that age, because I felt like that's what my coaches did for me in college, and it had a big impact on me.
And our guest this week is Eric Brennan. He is the head men's basketball coach at Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro, New Jersey. Took the Profs to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament this past season. And Eric, thanks for coming in studio.
Matt, thanks for having me.
So you are the guy now. You had all that success last season as the interim. With the interim title taken off, is life much different, or does it just kind of feel like, you know, it did before?
Yeah, I would say it's a lot of the same. So you're still preparing for this upcoming season as I did last season, but it is nice not to have that tag associated with the name anymore, and just a little more settling to feel more permanent within the position. So I think that allows me to focus on certain areas of the program and the position a little more this year and moving forward.
How did you handle it when you took over? I mean, it's a great opportunity, but when you're the interim, and at first, you know, when you're jumping in with both feet, you know, was it difficult at first finding your pace? Because you were on staff, we should say, for several years. So, Sure. You know, you weren't coming into a completely new situation.
Sure. So I would say it's definitely different having the interim associated compared to, I would think, not having it. But really, it's doing your best in the job, right? Not, you know, I was taking the position no matter what. I knew that it was a great job being there for 5 years as an assistant and being familiar with Rowan University and their success as a program. It was something I was going to step into regardless of what the end result was, because, you know, we all know seasons can turn out a bunch of different ways. You know, you have this idea in your mind of where you can take it. And what can happen, and sometimes that's not it. And that is a risk that you take in taking a temporary job at the time. But really, once, you know, I accepted it, it wasn't on my mind that much, because the focus is winning, the focus is the team, the focus is the student athletes and what they may need and what type of support they need from me. So you get really busy when the season starts. So there's not a lot of thoughts outside of that come into it.
Anything surprise you when you took over? Like, kind of once you started, was there something that came across your desk that you were like, oh, occurred to me I'd have to handle that?
I think plenty. There's nothing that sticks out, but you are in a different seat and there are different responsibilities and things that the program needs that I think with it being my first year and just, you know, lack of experience, it's my first time going through a lot of that. So there's probably things that slipped me that, you know, I think we'll be better with this year around. But my fellow coaches and coworkers within the athletic department, it's really a great environment there. So they help you keep on track with what you might not be thinking of or, you know, things like that to make sure that you're on top of everything.
From an X and O standpoint, because you guys had success with Joe Crispin, the previous head coach, mm-hmm. and it just rolled right into your year last year. Did you do a lot different X and O, or did you kind of maintain what the focus was, what you guys, the bread and butter of what you would run last season?
I think conceptually, a lot of it stayed the same. We were pretty up-tempo, and I think that feeds into the type of team that we had. So, and we'll continue to operate that way moving forward as well. I would say I probably added more structure than we had, whether it was individual sets or whatever it may have been. But, you know, we still did get up and down. We were a high-performing scoring offense. So a lot of that stayed the same. And really, I think that your program and your X's and O's or whatever it may be should really play to the talent that you have and the skill sets that you have on your team. So at our level, at the Division III level, you know, we can't give out scholarships. So you can't necessarily handpick your team every year. So teams may look different year over year. And I think it's our job as a staff to adjust to that, whether that means, you know, this upcoming year or years in the future to slow it down a bit and play to our strengths. This past season, I think we had similar skill level that we used to play with Coach Crispin's team. So it kind of made sense to allow that progression to still take place.
Mentioned Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. You guys have a great run. How long did it take you? Because I talked to you during that run, mm-hmm. and you're so focused on the next opponent and the logistics and where are we going and stuff like that. How long did it take you to kind of take a deep breath and kind of savor that postseason run you guys were able to have?
Yeah, it was probably like a week or two after our loss to Hampton, Sydney, where I was able to reflect and be like, you know what, it was a pretty solid season. I think our student athletes got a lot out of it. I think the seniors enjoyed their last year with making the run they had. And you got to remember, like, we lost in the semifinals of our conference. So for the group to come back and get two NCAA tournament wins and then play against the national runner-up on their home court and give them a good try, you know, I think that, yeah, when it was all done, it's like, all right, you know, we had a pretty decent season. Now, what can we do to get better? You know, so it was definitely that balance of appreciating what we've done and not being satisfied.
Do you think this year will slow down as a second year in that chair? And I don't mean the games. I just mean like everything that's coming at you, just having gone through the whole cycle once, now here in year two, a little bit more. Okay, I know I've got time for this. This is something I've got to deal with right away, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Now that I have my footing and have gone through a year of really preparation, I think this second year will allow me to know what to spend time on, what not to spend time on, or what we've already put in place in terms of a system that we can kind of rinse and repeat, which means that I don't have to spend as much time on this year as I did in a previous year. So, yeah, I think having that grounding of already going through it, and then also, right, how do I use my staff in a more efficient way as well? How do I incorporate them more to add value to the team? So things that I may not have focused on in year one, I'll probably put more focus on in year two.
This sounds like kind of a silly question, but I mean it mm-hmm. sincerely. How long did it take you to get used to being in the chair game day? Like when it came to like timeouts, talking to the refs, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's new. I mean, you had some relationship with refs and stuff like that, but now it all kind of comes on you. Did it take a couple games to get comfortable with that?
I would say personally, I felt pretty comfortable in that position. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't learning curves associated with game management and being in that position. And I think my staff was able to help me out with that. But in terms of kind of feeling comfortable in that position. And like you said, I had familiarity with the conference and the refs and things like that. And my demeanor is going to be my demeanor. So I think whether I'm an assistant or head or, you know, whatever my spot is on a coaching staff. So I really brought that with me into the head job. You know, I don't get too rah-rah or anything like that. It allows me to focus and think about the next play and really think the game rather than watch it. So that wasn't something that really, you know, once the season was over that I thought about that I needed to kind of address or even think about.
So now let's dig into your backstory. What's your earliest basketball memory growing up?
Oh, man. So grew up in Chester, Pennsylvania, historically known basketball town. But, you know, shout out to Dennis Shaw, who's was one of my teammates growing up. He's the head football coach there now, and him and his staff are really turning the football team around there and doing a great job. But one of my earliest memories that really sticks out is probably Chester Biddy, 9-year-old, 10-year-old all-star team. So we go to typically 5 tournaments a year. You play 5 games within those tournaments, and it's Aston, it's Media, it's Paoli, it's all the local surrounding neighborhoods. And we're down 1. There's about 10 seconds left on the clock. I'm inbounding the ball to Tyreek Evans, at the time was my teammate, and I pass it into him. And again, we're only down 1, so we're thinking he's going to get to the basket. He takes 1 dribble, like inside the hash, and pulls a 3. And, you know, we beat our nemesis, Paoli, who we played in every championship game. And they played really tough. And, you know, we beat them every championship for like 4 years straight. So part of me, you know, looking back at it, it's like, man, you know, that team. But, yeah, I would say that moment was a pretty special one that still kind of sticks out.
What kind of player were you growing up as far as your game?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I was the type of player, really, I could give us whatever the team needed. You know, at times I was a mismatch because I was kind of like in between with my height, where I wasn't really a big, wasn't really a guard. So I think that allowed me a lot of advantages offensively, but really playing team ball. You know, I think you could plug me in with any team and I'll contribute in a way that impacts winning. So, you know, I would say that's probably the biggest.
When did you start to realize you were good?
So it's funny. I think it's, you know, I think that's a catch 22. I think it's a good, I think it's a nice mindset to keep working. And I think sometimes that's hard to do when you feel like you're of a certain status or of a certain level of play. So for me, it didn't really happen until probably like my freshman, sophomore year of college, where I kind of started to acknowledge where I was. And I think my brother helped me realize that. Ended up being first team all PSAC as a sophomore. But growing up, high school, everything, like I'm on all the all-star teams, I'm starting. But there was always players better than me as well. So it was kind of just getting better every day and really just enjoying playing basketball, regardless of where I ranked or who saw me here or who saw me there. I think, you know, especially the off season for basketball back in the day was a lot different than it is today. So I wasn't really caught up in, I don't know, like my, I enjoyed playing basketball, you know, so I knew I would say I was decent, right? Like I kind of understood like I was better than a handful, but I think that kept me grounded to, you know, really work for everything I got.
The idea of playing college basketball, was that always kind of baked in, or was that something that, because you went to West Catholic, right?
Yep.
For high school. So, you know, or was that something like during your high school career, you started to realize that, oh, wait a minute, I really got a legit shot at this.
It was always baked in. It was more so a matter of level. And I played football in high school as well. But basketball was always my passion. It was always what I wanted to do. So that thought of playing college basketball was probably there since 9th grade or so, you know, so that was always there. But then once I really hit my senior year, it's like, all right, you know, schools are starting to talk. Where can I legitimately play and who's going to pay for the most of it, right? Because my situation and my background, that
absolutely,
you know, getting a scholarship was a huge part of that. So that was more so the thinking, how can I get school paid for? And was fortunate enough for only one school to offer me a scholarship out of high school. So
and that was Lock Haven?
I was Lock Haven. So did 2 years at Lock Haven University. Really enjoyed my time up there. Ended up transferring after my sophomore year. And at that point, I had a good pick of where I wanted to go. Had a lot of scholarship offers at that time, coming off a great season. And chose Kutztown University. Coach York and Coach Driscoll, you know, on my initial visit, felt like home and committed on the spot.
Was there a reason for the transfer, or just you just thought it was time for a different challenge?
So there was things going on within the athletic department where it didn't seem like scholarship money was kind of iffy or it might not be available. So they understood why I would want to transfer and were in support of that. So that really made the process easy for me. It was a little harder to, you know, leave my teammates behind and friendships, but, you know, I still keep up with those guys to today. So, you know, I have two teams that I was able to be a part of and develop great friendships because of that.
How difficult was it changing programs from a basketball standpoint?
Yeah.
Like, how much was maybe what was bread and butter at Lock Haven was not bread and butter at Kutztown? And how much of a challenge was that adjusting?
Yeah, great question. So Lock Haven, we weren't high performing in the PSAC, right? So we didn't have a great record. Kutztown was coming off, I believe, an Elite Eight run, PSAC East champ. So they're like a powerhouse within the PSAC at the time. So the biggest adjustment for me, and I think I knew it going in, and it's one of the reasons why I chose Kutztown, because they were bringing in two Division I transfers. They had an all-conference, two all-conference players returning. So I'm like, I'm going to have to work, you know, just to be a starter. And points may decrease, statistical categories may decrease, but I want to play in playoff games, you know, and I want my family to be able to come see me play. So Kutztown's about an hour away from Chester, but I would say that was probably the biggest adjustment. Kutztown, we did get up and down a little more, so I enjoyed playing that way, but it was really going from a program that didn't have a tradition of winning into a program that did, and it was a positive adjustment, but it meant that, you know, sacrifices from everybody involved would have to happen.
And you ended up playing a year in Finland, right?
I did.
What was that experience like?
Oh, man. So I land and I'm like, what the heck am I doing out here? So, you know, and I try to share this with anyone that wants to play professionally. And I think you'll hear it from a lot of the guys that do play professionally, is it is a grind. You have to, you know, really want it and really grind it out for the first year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, so it was a shock to me. It was, you know, different culture, being away from my family, everything like that. So it was a big adjustment and a lot of adjustment. And at the time, I think that I was kind of burnt out from basketball, you know, and kind of just thought about being closer to family back home. And I've always wanted to test what I can do in other areas. So I felt like at the time, you know, I was able to achieve playing a year professionally. And now I'm kind of like, well, what can I do in the corporate world? And, you know, what can I do in business? And where can my career take me outside of sports? Because up until then, it's been all sports. And in hindsight, you know, looking back now, I tell the kids, you have plenty of time to grow up. But at the time, that was kind of my thinking. But big adjustment. Super glad I went and did it. And I think I experienced a lot of growth from it as well.
To the point of experience, are the memories better basketball-wise from Finland, or are they better kind of the life experience and getting the chance to go somewhere that I assume you had never been before?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think from a basketball standpoint, you kind of get to learn other strategies and ways of coaching and things like that and concepts. So from that aspect, it was really cool. And even getting to, you know, get friendships with other teammates and things like that. But I think from the cultural aspect is probably the most eye-opening experience, you know, and just seeing a different part of the world. So probably cultural.
Did you travel a lot prior to that trip to Finland?
I did one trip with Global Sports Academy. They put together a group of college players and we toured. I think we played 5 games in 9 days or so. So we went to Belgium, Brussels, Germany. And it's funny, Coach Caridio, who's the head coach at Widener University, was the coach that took us over at that time. And they recently shared text messages and pictures from that group. So that was a really cool experience. That was my first time getting outside of the United States and experiencing Europe.
Did you always figure you were going to coach? Because you talked about a little burnout on basketball, mm-hmm. and looking at the corporate world. Was it always in the back of your mind that whether it was, you know, a youth league or college basketball, mm-hmm. did you ever always figure you were going to coach one way or another?
I knew I'd be involved one way or another. I did want to be involved at the college level. So
actually, when I returned back from Finland, I got an opportunity to coach at Philadelphia University under Coach McGee, Hall of Fame coach, and Jimmy Riley was the assistant who I had a close relationship with that helped me get on staff. But yeah, so I jumped into coaching right away, and it was something that I knew that I wanted to do. I wanted to be around the sport. I enjoyed the sport so much, but I think I wanted to be around it in a different way. And I think that, you know, I really wanted to start to get my footing on how to help student athletes and college athletes at that age, because I felt like that's what my coaches did for me in college, and it had a big impact on me.
Did you do any corporate world work?
I worked for Enterprise Rent-A-Car for about a year, and then once I got the assistant job at Philadelphia University, I got into college admissions, because that job was your typical 9-to-4. So it allowed me to go to practice every day, go to games, and be involved in basketball really as a full-time person. So and worked admissions all the way up until, you know, I got the interim job last year at Rowan.
Was it difficult at all? Because you're probably, what, 23-ish, 24 when you come on staff with Herb McGee? You know, you've got some kids on the team that are 21, 22 probably. Was it tough from that age standpoint, like being an authority figure, someone that they have to listen to just because of the age being so close? I know it would be 10 times harder if they had been your teammates and you were trying to do that, or was that not really a problem?
I don't think so. I think the relationship develops though as you get older. So my relationship with the kids on the team when I was a young assistant is different than even my relationship 2 years ago as an assistant with kids on the Rowan team. But I think at that point, it's really just coming in every day and learning from Coach McGee and learning from Jimmy Riley about recruiting and running a program and game preparation and scouts. So from that aspect, it was really learning a lot about coaching. From the players' aspect, I felt comfortable because I had a good enough college resume to where I think that the players could at least appreciate what I did in college and take some advice, criticism from me if I were to give some. But I think, you know, when you are a young assistant, like I said, the relationship's different. So I might be the guy that's uplifting guys and really just, do you need a rebounder? What can we work on? And things like that. So, you know, I think coaching roles evolve as you kind of are in the profession more and as your, you know, age, you know, changes as well.
Were you patient as a young coach? And what I mean by that is when you're an above average to very good player like you were, there are certain things that probably come easy to you, or they're at least reflexive. You don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to coach someone and maybe they're not getting the same thing, did you have to work on your patience to understand that their skill set or how they learn is different than my skill set and how I learned, and mm-hmm. I have to find a way to bridge the gap?
So I think it's more so on players' outlooks, and it's even true today, but players' outlooks on their skill set and their value, less of I wish he would do this and more of their perception and self-awareness is probably the hardest thing to deal with. And it was the hardest thing to deal with then. Because like I said, like you asked me the question on when did I realize I was good? I was kind of the mindset that I wasn't, right? So that kind of always kept me level and humble of appreciating what's come and continuing to work, where I think that dynamic has shifted for a lot of players. So typically that self-awareness of where do I stand and you know, how do I get minutes and things like that. But, you know, when I first joined Philly U and the staff there, we had tremendous players. Like, they were very good. So it was more so, man, I wish I could, you know, do what he's doing, right? So, or I wish I could have done what he did. So the skill level of those players my first couple years was extremely high.
What was the thing when you started coaching? What was the first thing you kind of were like, oh, this doesn't just happen. We actually have to do this. Like, there are so many little parts of a program, you know, when it to getting t-shirts, making sure the dinner on the road and stuff like that. Was there something that was kind of an eye opener that you realized, like, this is part of being a coach?
Yeah, I would say definitely like the logistics around travel and organizing all of that. But it's more, I think the biggest thing I picked up from Philly U was just the way the players responded to Coach McGee and the head coach and being on time and the type of presence that he had in his room with his players. And that stuff doesn't just happen, right? And it doesn't happen in 1 year. You know, I think what he was able to build there, and the way his players respected him and the way the program ran, I think it was a culmination of what he was able to do in all the years that he's been there. And for the players to have an expectation of what coach expects, and for those older players to help the younger players understand that.
Time to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more of our conversation with Rowan University head men's basketball coach Eric Brennan in just a few moments. But right now, there's nothing quite like the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid when it comes to exhilarating efficiency. With hybrid technology and thrilling capability, these vehicles deliver an electrifying performance on every drive. Discover for yourself what truly makes these hybrids special. Redefine your driving experience with Honda, KBB.com's best value brand of 2023. Contact your local Honda dealer today about the Honda Accord Hybrid and the CR-V Hybrid. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with Eric Brennan, head men's basketball coach at Division III Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey. So at Philly U, as you mentioned, Herb McGee, the head coach, legend, Hall of Famer, one of the winningest coaches of all time. Biggest lessons you learned from him, watching him, being around him for the years you were on staff?
Yeah, I would say kind of what I was alluding to previously is everything involved in running a program and really just building a program up to a level where expectations are clear. Conduct is clear. So what people call culture, what he was able to build there, you know, I would want to emulate. You know, so I think that was one of my biggest takeaways. And the other was how we repetitiously practice our offensive sets day after day after day. And knowing that other teams would scout them, but even though they did, we always seemed to get a good shot. So what he was able to put in on the offensive end, and understanding that you had to focus on something to be great at. And I think that was our focus at that time with his program, and really just seeing it. Like, it was every day. Like, I would know every single position on what everybody's doing. I think everybody in the team would, because of the repetition we put behind that. And it resulted in, you know, a lot of successful seasons and wins for us when I was on staff.
And you mentioned Jimmy Riley, who was Herb McGee's top assistant, now is in charge of the program. What'd you learn from him? Because they're different guys.
They are. So Jimmy's, I mean, he just works his tail off, right? Like, I learned recruiting from Jimmy Riley. That was the thing that I thought was most important as an assistant to understand how to be able to do. You know, so I would go on recruiting trips with him. He would let me in on when he contacts kids and, you know, what those conversations look like. But really just like getting out there and seeing kids. And then once you find one that you like, really helping them understand and know, like, hey, right, like, you're our guy. And it could look different. It could be a text. It could be a call. It could be a house visit. It should be all of them. And it could be, you know, going to the game. So I think the recruiting aspect of basketball was a big takeaway for me and Jimmy Riley. And super glad I was able to be on staff for that. And then I would say the second thing is game preparation and scouting. He scouts like no other. And, you know, as an assistant and even as a head coach now, like, recruiting and scouting are two big pillars on being successful, in my opinion.
What was the toughest thing to learn about recruiting? Because I would think when you start that, to me, it would feel like almost overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like, there are so many kids, so many players, and how can I get the context of, well, this guy looks great, but who's he playing against? And how does that skill set come into what I want to do?
Yeah, it is tough. And especially my first year or two, I'm just kind of sitting in the back and watching and learning. And I think that's probably important for most assistants that come into a situation, right? Because I don't know the talent level in the CACC. I don't necessarily know the players that the head coach wants me to bring in. So he helped me understand early on, because I would send him a player to him and he'd be like, I don't think that's a fit for the program. And here's the reasons why. So I think mostly it's, what does the head coach want? How do we play? And then does this player fit in with him? But you're right, like, it can be overwhelming. So I think the longer you're in it, the better idea you have of
what program they're coming from, the talent level they're playing against. And you don't necessarily have to go crazy, right, and recruit the whole United States. You have to have your pockets where you feel comfortable and you know there's going to be good talent and bring those kids in and develop them. But yeah, I think the biggest thing definitely as an assistant coach is understanding what the head coach wants. And that comes over time by developing the relationship and being on staff for a few years. And then it's like, all right, how does this kid compare to one of the all-conference players we just had? And will he project in another 2 or 3 years to be something similar to that?
What are some of your favorite memories from being on staff there? A lot of winning. A lot of winning.
A ton of winning. I think just, you know, the bus rides, the hotel hangouts, you know, we would play some trivia and things like that. You know, so just the outside of basketball stuff where you're kind of just hanging out, throwing jokes around, things like that. So that's probably the biggest thing.
So what's the road that gets you to Rowan as an assistant?
Yeah, so I took a full-time job at Rowan University in their admissions department. So at that time, it didn't make sense for me to commute back and forth from Philadelphia University and Rowan. So at the time, I asked Joe Crispin, who was the head coach, if there was a spot on his staff. And it was probably a good coaching change for me as well, because I was with Philadelphia University for 5 years. So learning under a different coach, a different system, different concepts, you know, not really understanding it at the time. It was kind of just like, well, I'm here full time. It'd be great to be on the staff. They have a winning tradition as well. But then also taking into account the different concepts I learned and way of thinking, because Joe Crispin is, you know, at the complete opposite spectrum than Coach McGee, just in terms of, you know, their approach and strategy to winning and things like that.
You had been Division II as a player. Philly U, now Jefferson, is Division II. Rowan, Division III. Was that a transition at all? Like, just to, because it's a different set of rules, different type of player you're looking for, things like that?
It is. It definitely was a transition. And you're going from private D2 to public D3. No scholarships at the Division III level. So I think with that comes a different level of how the program runs, or even how you would like it to run, because there's no scholarships tied to the participation. So I think when scholarships are involved, it does change a level of kind of how a program runs. So I would say that's probably the biggest change, but then also the type of student athlete we're recruiting at Rowan was extremely different than the type of student athlete we would recruit at Philly U. So yeah, definitely a transition. And also coming from, you know, a Hall of Fame coach that has been in it for decades and getting on with Joe Crispin, I think he was in his third season, right? So relatively new coach. He's learning as he goes too, and was very open and humble, you know, about that in his experience at Rowan too in the early years.
Is there a point along your years as an assistant where you started to think, I feel like I'm ready to, if not pursue a head coaching job, like start to get into that mindset of keeping an eye on what's going on? Like, was there a point that you started to kind of, I don't know if transition, but you started to think like, that is something I'd really like to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that probably my first couple years in the Rowan, you know, you start keeping eyes on jobs and things like that. And it's more so having enough experience to also be able to have a shot. But being a head coach is something that I've always wanted to become ever since I got into college coaching. I think it's probably, not always, but for the most part, a dream scenario for most coaches, especially young coaches. But yeah, I started to keep an eye on movements and going to the Final Four and things like that. You know, so that was something that was kind of on my radar. And it was just more so, you know, would the opportunity come? I know there's not a ton of them, and it did for me, and super, you know, was super excited for that.
Now, we talked about Joe Crispin. He'd been the head coach for several years. He goes back to his alma mater, Penn State, to be an assistant. How exactly does the conversation of you at the time becoming the interim head coach, is that something that, you know, I don't want you to betray any private conversations or anything, but is that something that Joe says, hey, this is what's likely or probably going to happen? You might want to make a call, put yourself in position. Like, how did it work?
So with him leaving, there wasn't anything that was necessarily told to me. I think it's just an understanding. Well, you know, there's no head coach. I've been here for a few years, kind of have a
good enough resume to put my name in the hat. So I reached directly out to the athletic director and just expressed my interest, you know, so that was about it. Hey, you know, I'd be extremely interested, you know, and everything like that. But yeah, I would say that was the crux of it.
How have you changed as a coach from coming on board with Herb McGee to where you are now?
Yeah, I think when I first got into coaching, you know, I think you have an idea of what works, what doesn't work, or I would do this, or, you know, and now it's more so understanding why coaches do things a certain way, and understanding what advantages and disadvantages come with either that thought or that concept or that style of play. So I think it's a more mature understanding of coaching, and then also being able to watch other coaches and pick things off of them and understand why they do it. And then for me to decide, is that the disadvantage I want to live with? Or is that, you know, the advantage I want to live with? Is it going to give us enough that helps us win, right? So I would say really thinking about different styles of play, different coaching approaches probably changed a lot from when I initially started to where I am now, you know, and then really just being in the position of a head coach now, starting to implement what I want our program to look like. I think I realize that that takes time. It doesn't all happen in 1 year, 2 years. It's a cumulative effort over time of now this is Rowan basketball. You know, so just having kind of an understanding of that.
Now your brother's on your staff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What is that like? How cool is it to have somebody that's been with you from the beginning, you know, on your staff?
Yeah, super cool. It was great going through the season with him. I mean, cool because he's my brother, but also his basketball knowledge is great. His connections are great. So the value that he could bring to our program was outstanding. He's the type of guy, like, since he was 11, 12 years old, you'd say a player, he'd be able to name their hometown, where their brother goes to school. Like, he's that type of guy. He just knows basketball information. And that's the way he's always been. So having him on staff was huge. You know, he's someone I've always looked up to, always been there for my own career with sports and things like that. So to have him on staff and him, you know, being excited to do it and willing to do it, I just knew how much value it would add to our program and our players.
Has the relationship changed as you guys have coached together?
No, I don't think so. I think it's still the same, maybe even better. He's always dropping me gems here and there with different type of things that lead into coaching, and whether it's a speaker here or a podcast there, he's continuously learning and you know, sharing that knowledge with me and allowing for me to decide if that's something I want or a direction I want to go. But always kind of keeping it on my mind too.
Ben, I don't think we've said his name, John Brennan.
Yes.
Do you prefer practice or games as a coach?
That's a good question. I'm supposed to say practice. I enjoy a lot about the game too, because the game is the players get to really, you know, kind of put what we've been doing all week and the preparation we've been doing all week and put it on display. So the game part of it is a great thing to watch and really cool to see the players execute and the game within the game that happens. But practice is a lot of fun too. So it is really hard to say. Practice is more so focus, like really thinking about and focusing what do we need to get better at. There's a lot of fun in that, but it's more so like business. Like, practice is business, and then the game should be fun, you know. So
love to win or hate to lose.
It's funny, for some reason I thought about it on the way over here, and I wonder if my answer will change as I get later in my career. The losses suck. Like, they do. And the first bad loss that I think I experienced as a head coach was difficult to go through. But at the same time, like, I wonder, like, I question, will I remember the tough losses or the great wins? So, and again, most coaches say, oh, I hate to lose more, I want to win. I get it. But when I look back on this season, I think about the win at Catholic, right? I think about some of the game winners and how great that was.
I also think about the, you know, the losses that I wish we hadn't given up. So it's hard to say. You know, I want to hope that when I'm done college coaching that I think back to the good memories, right? So I think that would put me in the category of love to win rather than hate to lose. I think in the season, hate to lose. In the season when you're hate to lose. I don't even think it's close. I think it's hate to lose in the season. When the season's over or you're looking back at past seasons, I think it's love to win.
Does success hit differently as a player and a coach?
It's a good question. I think it does. I think it does. I think as a coach, the way success hits is the joy that your team expresses. And I think that that is a greater thing to be a part of because you are a little mature and you're just in a different phase of your life. At least for me, like I get joy out of them experiencing joy more so than success as a player and experiencing that joy. You know, so I would say it is different just because the outlook on how that success is celebrated is a little different.
And my final question, favorite part of the job?
Oh, man, probably competition. You know, probably the games. I would say recruiting and like putting the team together prior to going into the season and being really excited about it. And then, man, getting out there and seeing how good we are. You know, and enjoying, like, I still enjoy the games. I still enjoy the competition part of basketball and the pursuit of that and the pursuit of being successful. You know, that drives a lot of it. And it's fun. You know, when you're winning, it's fun. Yeah, I would favorite part of the job, the camaraderie and the joking too, like just the banter that goes on is fun to be around. That's why we like to go on the trips. But I think when you got a game day, like you're pumped up. I'm as pumped up as I was when I was a player. Like that is something I look forward to.
Eric Brennan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Rowan University head men's basketball coach Eric Brennan for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
With Ring cameras, you can protect your home from anywhere. You're at baggage claim, and you get a motion alert. Check live view and see a guy looking in your car window. Luckily, you've got floodlight cam. So you press the siren button and let 105 decibels do the rest. Problem solved. Home protected. Bag on its way. With Ring, you can protect your home from anywhere. Learn more at ring.com.